Members of the House Elections Committee will come to order. Welcome. We don't have a quorum yet, but until we do, we'll proceed with the business as usual. Our first bill up today is Representative Erdahl's House File 2943. Representative Erdahl, I understand this is going to the Government Operations Committee.
I understand.
Mr. Chairman, members, this bill regarding elections and appointments of county attorneys was brought to me by members of the Meeker County Board of Commissioners, who had a what they perceived to be a problem with appointments and elections of a county attorney. State statute requires that a county attorney must be a resident of the county in which they file for office. It's not so with appointments. You don't have to be a resident of the county if you are appointed to a vacancy. Under current law, if someone were to resign as county attorney early in their term, someone could be appointed for 3 years and 11 months, say, to an elected office. And I don't believe that this was the intent of the framers of our state constitution. This bill would allow for the appointment for 1 year after resignation of a person to fill the county attorney position, and then it would go to a special election. Unless it's in the final year of the term, then it would just be the next general election. Commissioners that I've talked to and a judge thought that this seemed to be a reasonable solution to this particular situation. I recognize that there are some concerns that may be brought up here. I think I'll just address them. Yes, there may be some additional cost doing the special election. But the fact is that these are very rare. When we checked with Hennepin County, the Director of Human Resources there could recall none. Well, said there was none in the last quarter century, and frankly could not remember any in the history of the county. Now, it might have happened at some point. I can't say with true veracity on that, but it's very unlikely. It's very rare that we have these types of appointments. And frankly, if there is a cost, if we are trying to maintain what is the, I believe, the intent of those who wrote the Constitution, there is a cost to a democracy. Elections do cost money. Now, I looked at doing an amendment to make sure that low population counties were covered. I don't want to see a situation where they can't find someone and suddenly they have to have no county attorney. What I discovered within the bill is that we don't need the amendment because, frankly, if a county has appointed someone to the county attorney's position and the bill says that that shall be maintained until filing for office, if no one files, if there is no one, then they would just keep on. So we wouldn't need to have a provision to keep reappointing because they would just keep going if there was nobody available to take the position. What I'm trying to do is just to support, again, the intentions of our state founders and to fix what I think has become a glitch in our election system. And yes, it affects Meeker County right now, but I don't think it was the intent for any county in the state to be put in the position of having to have appointed people serve for lengthy terms in elective office.
Representative Erdahl, we do now have a quorum if you'd like to move your bill.
So I would move that this bill be referred to the Committee on Government Operations.
Very good. Thank you. I have a question, Representative Erdahl,
yes.
Before we get to other questions. And you and I have talked offline about this, obviously. Is the main objection, either yours or the folks in Meeker County, is the main objection the duration or the possible, plausible, hypothetical duration of an unelected, appointed successor? Is it the duration that it could be 3 years or 11 months, or is it really more that it could be a long duration with someone who doesn't live in the county, who's not a resident? Am I confusing those two issues? I just want to understand.
No, Mr. Chairman, I think actually it's a combination. They don't want to see someone serving over a year in an elective office as an appointed person.
Even if that person is a resident of the county.
Right.
But the residency wrinkle is just that. It's an added wrinkle that maybe, in your judgment, sort of intensifies the need for this. But
yes.
It's mostly the duration.
Most the duration. And, Mr. Chairman, once you file for the office, state statute says you must be a resident of the county, and so that covers it. Once there is an election, then you have to be living in the county.
Okay. Very good. Any member, before we turn to other testifiers, any member questions or comments for Representative Erdahl? Okay. Testifiers. Anyone in the audience who wishes to be heard on the bill? Mr. Kingery.
Well, don't come all at once.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is John Kingery, speaking on behalf of the Minnesota County Attorneys Association. I did have a chance, regrettably this morning and not earlier, to talk with Representative Erdahl about our concerns.
Talked to me?
Well, I regrettably talked to you so late. No, we had a good conversation, and I clearly understand some of his issues. And with regard to the situation here in Meeker County, our board will look at this bill on Friday, but I know as of this point we have had some concerns. The emails I received from our members have been from rural members. This obviously is not going to be an issue in the seven-county metropolitan area. Some people argue we've got more attorneys than we need in the metro area, but in the rural areas, this is an issue, the need to find good qualified attorneys. I believe in this particular situation, the appointed county attorney, it took him a few months to sell his house and eventually find something in Meeker County. So there was that transition period. I think that's what led to some of the delay in moving to Meeker. He is a resident there now, is my understanding.
I don't think so.
Oh, really? Mm-hmm. All right. My understanding is that he is, but
been very recent if he is.
Okay. All right. Well, I will verify that if that is not true. But in recent years, there have been a number of counties. A lot of times there's a vacancy because the county attorney gets appointed to a judgeship. That's usually the way a vacancy occurs. Norman County appointed a county attorney, and that person was not a resident initially. Stevens County appointed a county attorney when that county attorney, sitting county attorney, was appointed a judge. In fact, for a while, I believe Stevens even was doing county attorney work by contract with another county, and I'm a little fuzzy in the details, but that does seem to ring a bell. Also, Winona had somebody for about a year, not as long. It doesn't get into the length issue that I know Representative Erdahl has mentioned, but that person was not a resident. And either Lake of the Woods or Cooch had a county attorney for a while that was not a resident because they just simply couldn't find anybody else up there. When it came to time to file for election, he then moved from that area and they found somebody else. A number of our counties have what we call part-time county attorneys. It's probably about 23 or 24 of them. They are county attorneys that have a private practice but also are the county attorney. They run for election, but they are the county attorney. And I think especially for those counties, it may be a challenge to find an existing current attorney in that county that's willing to give up his or her practice, maybe to take a lesser paying job as a county attorney. So sometimes the ability to reach out and hire somebody from outside the county getting them to eventually move in before the next election works for a number of those counties. With that, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'll conclude my remarks and be happy to answer any questions that you might have.
I do, Mr. Kingery. I realize these are issues that you probably have to run up the flagpole, so to speak, with your membership. I understand, defer to that process. But I'm just thinking out loud here. Is there some, do you think, possible durational compromise that could be in the works? I mean, Representative Erdahl brings up the plausible hypothetical, I suppose, that someone could be an appointed county attorney and one who's a non-resident at that. But regardless, that person could be appointed and serve 3 years, 11 months. Mm-hmm. Unlikely, but certainly possible. It sounds like the one-year restriction you think would be kind of unduly burdensome. Can you comment about whether you think your membership might at some point come to some other agreement about a durational compromise?
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, I think it gets to the point, would that person then be reappointed or would they have to run for election? If you're talking about having to run for an election, a special election, and then maybe 2 years later run for an election again, that may make it more difficult to recruit an attorney. And I had another point that escaped me right now, but I think that, if it would simply be the person would then be reappointed on an annual basis until the conclusion of the term. I might have some concerns about that because you could have a county attorney appointed under one board. You get a new board coming in and saying, I don't like that person, and then not renewing that particular appointment. And I'm not suggesting in any way that there's any politics involved in any of this, but I'd hate to have, with a new county board, political issues enter into an appointment process.
Okay.
But we will look at that, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Kingery. Any questions by members for Mr. Kingery? Okay. Thank you, Mr. Kingery. Anyone else in the audience who wishes to be heard on this bill?
It's duly noted now we're going to keep politics out of county government.
Thank you, Representative Erdahl. I'm sorry, I overlooked your testimony. Go ahead. Welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chair and members, my name is Ryan Erdman. I represent the Association of Minnesota Counties. You usually see my colleague Bill Burnson here, but he was otherwise occupied today. And I think Representative Erdahl has talked to Bo and I think reflected our primary concern, which is the cost of creating new special elections that we may not have an obligation to do. So I will actually not take very much of your time because that really is the primary concern. Like the County Attorneys Association, we have a board meeting this Friday. We'll take it up with them. I think the policy concerns rightly belong with the county attorneys primarily. Ours again is as an election administrator, and the cost associated with that certainly piques our interest and gets us to the table to discuss this issue. So I won't take any more of your precious time.
Before you leave, though,
sure.
Could you just spell your name for the record?
Sure. My last name is Erdman, E-R-D-M-A-N-N.
Any questions for Mr. Erdman? By members. Thank you, Mr. Erdman. Representative Erdahl, any?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If I just might summarize, reiterate, or whatever you want to call it here. Again, the cost, you know, it's part of the cost of living in the country that we live in, that elections will cost money. And regarding some of the statements by the attorney here, again, when you file, you must live in the county that you are running in. I mean, that's, now, again, if you're appointed and you don't live in the county, well, you don't have to because you are appointed. And once again, if after 1 year under my bill, if that appointment is up and they call for a special election, the county board does, and no one files, then according to the bill, the appointed person would just keep serving. So there shouldn't be the fear of reappointments and all this or new boards. It just continues. So I guess that's my summary.
Thank you, Representative Erdahl. Anything else from other members? Okay, seeing nothing further, Representative Erdahl renews his motion that House File 2943 be re-referred to the Committee on Government Operations. All in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no. Motion prevails.
Thank you very much.
Representative Erdahl. The next bill is House File 2956. Representative Dean. Welcome, Representative Dean. I will move your bill. I'll move that House File 2956 be re-referred to the Committee on Government Operations. Welcome to the committee, Representative Dean.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Quite simply, what this bill does is it allows the opportunity for individuals on Election Day, and that would be state elections, the opportunity to go to and from the polls on buses and trains without a fare. So on New Year's Eve, we have beverage companies that support free bus fares, as well as on the recent St. Paddy's Day, there was the opportunity for folks to take free bus fares because we think that's an important safety issue. That ultimately what this does is we think the civic responsibility of voting is critical enough that we will provide free transportation fares to and from the polls.
Just having a sidebar there, Representative Dean. Do you have any testifiers here?
I do not.
Representative Dean? Okay. Any comments or questions from members for Representative Dean? Anyone in the audience who wishes to be heard on this bill? It still has a stop or two.
Two, I believe.
Okay. Seeing none, Representative Dean, I will renew my motion that House File 2956 be re-referred to the Committee on Government Operations. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Dean.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Atkins, House File 2463. As Representative Atkins is coming up, I just want to entertain a motion to approve the minutes of March 16th, 2014. Representative Mariani moves that we approve the minutes of March 16th, 2014. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion prevails. The minutes are approved. Representative Atkins, welcome to the committee.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, and or good afternoon, I guess it is. Thank you for hearing this bill. I appreciate it very much. House File 2463, Mr. Chairman, I have an author's amendment that is in your packet, and then a short, tweetable, I think that's the standard in GovOps, of an oral amendment to put it in the same shape that the Senate has it.
Sure. Representative Atkins, is your oral amendment to the amendment or to the bill?
It is to the bill.
Okay. Well, why don't we, just to get it in the shape that you wish it to be in, why don't we adopt the A14 amendment? Do you care to just comment quickly on what it does?
It basically just makes sure that we capture any sort of donations that are made, whether they're made directly or circumvent in an indirect fashion.
Okay. Well, I'll move the A14 amendment just to get it in the shape that the author wishes. All in favor of the A14 amendment? Well, actually, I'm sorry. Any testimony, questions from members on the A14 author's amendment? Okay, seeing none, all in favor of the A14 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion prevails. A14 is adopted. To your oral amendment, Representative Atkins.
And thank you, Mr. Chairman. What the Senate did and what Mr. Gehring indicated made some sense as well, is we've got a little extraneous language, some of which apparently would be like unconstitutional or something. So we're going to remove that. And so on line 1.9 through 1.10. We would take out from the words "to ensure equal treatment under the law" through the word "participation" on line 1.10, and then accordingly correct or capitalize word "political." We would make the same change, exactly the same change, on lines 1.17 and 1.18, again starting with "to ensure" through the word "participation," then capitalize the word "political." Finally, we would just delete the word "federal" on line 1.15. It should be the word "federal" and the comma as well as the comma after the word state. This is still minor, but it sounds complicated, doesn't it? So it deletes the word federal, the comma following federal, and the comma following state, and make the same change on line 1.23. Delete the word federal, delete the comma following the word federal, and delete the comma following the word state. I'll pause, Mr. Chairman, just to make sure that you and the clerk have it.
Sure. And Mr. Gehring, is that sufficient information for you to be a recognizable amendment? Okay. Okay, I think members can understand that. Any questions for Representative Atkins or comments about his proposed oral amendment to House File 2463? Okay, seeing none, all in favor of the amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion prevails. Representative Atkins, to your bill as amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's actually a very straightforward bill. You'll recall in the case of Citizens United that made it appropriate, U.S. Supreme Court said it's appropriate for corporations to be able to donate. I'm not objecting to that per se as in this bill. What I am suggesting, though, is that those corporate contributions are allowed to be made in pre-tax dollars, whereas an individual's contributions are made in post-tax dollars. The U.S. Supreme Court's point was to give both corporations and individuals an equal opportunity to have voice in the political process. Fine, but corporations shouldn't be able to have a louder voice by virtue of the fact that they get to make their donations in pre-tax dollars, worth roughly 30% more, perhaps, depending on what jurisdiction they're in. So this simply says they absolutely get to continue making those donations. They're just made in the same exact fashion as those donations made by an individual. That's a brief overview. I am fortunate to be accompanied by Minnesota's Court of Appeals, former Minnesota Court of Appeals Judge Jack Davies, and a friend of mine and a friend of most of ours who hangs out here with us at the Capitol now.
Judge Davies, welcome to the committee. Just introduce yourself and proceed.
I'm Jack Davies. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. And I'm not going to say anything. I think that this is a beautiful explanation that you just got from your colleague. But if somebody has a question, I'll...
I have a question, Judge, either for the author or for Judge Davies. But obviously, I know that you, Judge, have thought a lot about this, and having been on the Minnesota Court of Appeals, and now being a former member, can talk freely about your opinions on such issues because there's no case pending before you. Do you have an opinion as to whether this bill would be within the confines of Citizens United? In other words, this wouldn't get around, so to speak, Citizens United. Do you believe that this would be within the parameters of the Citizens United decision?
Thank you for the question, Mr. Chairman. I read the Citizens United case from beginning to end. The majority opinion, the concurring opinion, the dissenting opinion. And they never recognized the issue of equal protection. It's not talked about in the bill, in any of the opinions. I think it's a great oversight of the significance of that other constitutional provision, and that's the basis for this bill, is the Equal Protection Clause. And I put a little advertising in it at the beginning, and that's what you took out today following the lead of the Senate. I took out more purpose clauses as a senator than perhaps anybody in history, and I sat there and I could not say anything when the purpose clause was taken out here.
Well, Judge Davies, so I just so we're clear, do you having read all the various opinions, majority, concurring, and dissent, but is it your conclusion that this would be within the scope of
Yes, I think that the Equal Protection Clause, the theory of the Equal Protection Clause, and that's using this mechanism to deal with the inequity problem, it's perfectly constitutional. I'll give one hypothetical of what happens under Citizens United, which might make it more clear. Assume that three siblings own a corporation in equal shares, one-third, 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 and two are liberal and one is conservative, and the liberals can take, by their majority control of the corporation, make contributions out of the corporate treasury without having any individual income tax. But the third, with the viewpoints that among the three are minority viewpoint, has to take wages and dividends, pay tax, and then make his or her political contributions. And that's what bothers me, along with the fact that we had an election in Minnesota where a family formed a corporation, ran it for many years, became a huge success. Second generation turned it into a national corporation of huge significance. It became controlled by the stock market and the hired management. And the third generation member of that family chose to run for governor someplace. And the family all supported him, but the corporation, which they still had huge ownership in, decided to make a contribution to his opponent. And I thought that was sort of not even Stephen. So.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Representative Atkins, I'm just wondering, what about union contributions? I mean, should they be taxed as well as their expenditures?
Representative Erdahl, what we're talking about here are donations made by a corporation, just to make sure that they're taxed in the same fashion as an individual donation. My understanding is that union dues are treated differently.
Representative Erdahl. Members, any questions, comments, concerns? Is there anyone else in the audience who wishes to be heard on this bill? Okay. Seeing no one, I'll renew.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
I want the committee to know that the bill went to the floor of the Senate this morning about half an hour ago.
Well, this has at least another stop. And so I'll renew my motion that House File 2463 be re-referred to the Committee on Taxes. All in favor of the motion, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no.
No.
Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Atkins, Judge
Thank
Davies.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
The last bill is my bill, House File 2662, and I'm going to take the somewhat unusual step of just speaking from here because my intention is to lay the bill over. I'm the first to admit that the bill needs work. I know that people have some strong feelings about it, so I just want to say a few words from here about it because I don't want to take up more time than is necessary. The whole idea behind the bill is the idea that, you know, a corporate entity, as evidenced by Judge Davies' hypothetical just now, operates under typically some different rules, and in most contexts, that's very efficient for a board to make decisions on behalf of all the employees and all the vendors and everyone else affiliated with the corporation. But this seems to me to be qualitatively different than when you're talking about expenditures directly from the corporate treasury, not a PAC. That would be different. That would be unaffected by this bill if it were to be enacted. But we now know that under Citizens United, corporations and unions, to be fair, may now make expenditures, independent expenditures, directly from the entity's treasury. Rather than have to set up a political action committee. And it just seems to me, and many others I know nationwide, that some internal democratic process would seem to be fair. Now, in the case of unions, and I know there was an amendment here, I take it that's moot, we're going to lay this bill on the table. There was an amendment in your packet, is an amendment in your packet, that would extend the same kind of extend the bill, in essence, to unions. I think that the qualitative difference here is that unions typically, if not always, have an internal decision-making process, which is more or less democratic. You know, maybe folks here can quibble with that, but, you know, not always so in all corporations, particularly large corporations. So it seemed to me, and I know this is part of an effort nationwide as well, that it would make some sense to impose a simple internal governance requirement that shareholders, all of us, the people we know, can vote their shares. And so you'd have a proxy election of some kind, and so if you own 10 shares of Coca-Cola, you could vote those shares. If you owned 1,000 shares of General Mills, you could vote those shares as well. You know, practically speaking, with larger corporations where you have folks who are very large shareholders, by large meaning they own, you know, more than a percent or two of the corporations, the decision is probably most often going to be made by a relatively small group of people. But it seemed to me important to at least float the idea, as others have around the country, of making sure there's that internal process and that internal check. I see here that we have a memorandum in your packets from the Minnesota Chamber. I certainly don't mean to muzzle the good members of the Chamber, and you're free to testify, but I wanted to tell you that my intention is just to lay over the bill. I think it's useful for discussion purposes, but it certainly does. I'd be the first to acknowledge that it needs more work, but I certainly don't mean, Ms. Wallstein, to chill your ability to testify if you wish to be heard. That's certainly appropriate. I don't want to pressure you either way. It's your decision entirely. Ms. Wallstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Welcome. Amy Wallstein. I'm Director of Education, Workforce Development Policy, and Election Policy. And we outlined some of the concerns that we have with the bill. And so hearing from your opening that this is yet a work in progress, we would like to continue having that discussion with you. Some of the things that I raise in the letter, some of the concerns that we've heard from members, one that I if it would be appropriate to ask, the question of would this be applicable to nonprofit corporations is one in particular that we're looking for some clarity on. And then also how issue advocacy would be treated under your proposed bill. So we look forward to continuing the conversation with you as the bill progresses. Thank you.
I have a question for you, Ms. Wallstein. So there was an amendment in the packet, that would extend the same treatment here to the internal processes at unions. It would require a majority, in essence, of unions to do the very same thing. Would that alleviate some of your concerns? I confess I'm looking here at your memorandum. You don't explicitly address that. And maybe this is something that you, too, have to run up an internal flagpole, I guess. But do you think that would, just going forward, alleviate some concerns if there was no competitive disadvantage, I guess you might say, in the sense that other types of entities would be subject to the same, I guess, restriction? Do you think that would alleviate some of the concerns or not necessarily?
So, Mr. Chair, I think that what we'd like to see is that speech wouldn't be inhibited for corporate or for union. I'd have to take a deeper look at the amendment to see if that would alleviate some of the concerns and level the playing field for corporations as well as unions.
Okay. Any questions for, okay, these are questions. Representative Winkler, Ms. Wallstein.
Thank you, Ms. Wallstein. I actually think that corporations should not have First Amendment rights and that the Supreme Court was terribly misguided in its opinions going back 100 years on this issue, and particularly with respect to Citizens United. So let's just assume for a second that those First Amendment rights are misguided in their concept. Is there a reason why shareholders shouldn't be able to approve this? Don't they own the company?
Ms. Wallstein.
Representative Winkler, I think we'll agree to disagree on Citizens United. However, I think one of our primary concerns with this legislation would be our ability not only on the express advocacy side, but on the issue advocacy side.
Representative Winkler.
Mr. Chair, Ms. Wallstein, so I understand that. That's not a distinction I care about. I don't think you have a voice in either. I think your executives, your officers, your shareholders, your employees, all of those people are individuals with First Amendment rights as natural persons, and they should each be able to speak, and they should be able to use money to speak. But I also think that it would make sense, and I don't know why shareholders shouldn't have the right to approve spending on issue advocacy as well. Is there a reason why the owners of the company shouldn't be able to vote on that?
Ms. Wallstein.
Mr. Chair, Representative Blair, As we've started looking into this issue of shareholder approval, we're not seeing a large public outcry for this. The corporations that have been asked by their shareholders to approve resolutions on this, I think going back to 2006, only one has been approved. They fail with pretty large margins, so I don't think that there is that desire by an overwhelming majority of shareholders of public companies to have approval of political contributions and disclosure of that.
Representative,
Mr. Chair, Ms. Wallstein, in that case, it shouldn't really be a burden if the overwhelming majority don't want to interfere with the ability of management to make political decisions.
Mr. Chair, Representative Winkler, I do disagree that it would not be a burden. I think it would be a very, very burdensome activity for corporations to have to go get approval for every expenditure that they would make, be it express advocacy, political contributions, or in particular, issue advocacy, so approving lobbying expenditures for corporations.
I think, Mr. Chair, I think in practical effect, what this would do would be to have one vote, probably. I don't know if it would be annually or biannually or however it would work. And they would just basically approve one large donation to some outside third-party entity. I don't know. It probably would not be the chamber or the business partnership, or it would probably be some, you know, business PAC, and they would approve one big expenditure, and all that money would be done at one time rather than a whole bunch of individual ones. But it just seems to, maybe it's a question of dissenters' rights. In statute, we have a lot of protections for the economic rights of dissenters who are minority shareholders in the company in the event that the corporation is engaged in some business activity that those minority shareholders feel is unduly prejudicial to them in some way. They have a number of rights under corporate law to challenge and to get basically a payout under certain circumstances if their rights are not respected. So maybe there's there's another alternative, which is to create a method by which dissenting shareholders can force the corporation to make some accounting of what they're doing to the shareholders in their spending. But the problem is usually that in the companies that want to spend on politics, mostly it's a question of management capturing too much of the control of the company. The board is not sufficiently independent. The shareholders are not sufficiently engaged. And management uses corporate resources to direct it towards some of their personal issue areas. And it seems to me that this is a good balance that we always try to strike, which is to protect the rights of shareholders from the abuses and potential abuses of corporate management. And I think we really see that in the political spending, and there's a lot of research to support it. So I'm not hearing I hear a practical concern, and I understand the free speech argument. I don't agree with it. But I don't really see, there's no kind of foundational reason why shareholders shouldn't have the right to approve that I'm hearing.
Ms. Boston.
Mr. Chair and Representative Winkler, I think that if shareholders were looking for this, that there would have been some passage of the measures that have been brought to shareholder proxy votes in recent years. But we have not seen that happen, so I do not believe that there is shareholder outcry for a measure like this.
Ms. Wallstein, I have a question, as long as we've got you here. And if you don't know, you don't know. That's fine. Do you think, do you have an opinion or do you have a suspicion about what the opinion would be on shareholder notification? So what about a requirement that a corporation, though the corporation wouldn't have to obtain advance approval, would at least in an annual report or in some similar filing have to notify or disclose, the list of candidates or causes that the corporation contributed to or made expenditures on behalf of in a given period, a quarter, a calendar year, something like that? And if you don't know or don't have authority to say, I completely understand, but you want to, can you hazard a guess?
Mr. Chair, I believe that the campaign finance laws, both federally and the statewide, would require disclosure. Already do require like a great deal of disclosure with regards to express advocacy communications. And I do want to note that many of the large public companies, if you go on their websites, they're very open with what they are disclosing in terms of their memberships and trade associations, what other organizations they might belong to, what contributions that they're making, and what they do already disclose to their shareholders.
Well, okay, fair enough. And it's true that there are disclosure requirements in terms of campaign finance law. I guess what I'm more concerned about, and this can be a rhetorical question, is about whether there would be opposition to disclosing it, not just simply as part of a Minnesota Campaign Finance Board disclosure or an FEC disclosure, but as part of an actual corporate document that goes to shareholders separately, like an annual report, as part of the relevant, salient information that shareholders get about the performance and activities of the company. So I acknowledge and understand that there's other areas where they disclose, but I'm talking about something that's more directly sent to shareholders, I suppose. And I don't know, maybe you don't know yet whether there's an appetite for that, but if you care to comment, you may.
Mr. Chair, I believe that a lot of the large companies, that they're disclosing that via their websites. So if you go on some of the company websites, you'll see a lot of information on not just express advocacy, but issue advocacy and association memberships.
Okay. Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Two questions. One, you said we're going to lay the bill over. My question is, I guess, so we're going to bring it forward because I do have some things I'd like you to consider if we're going to be working on this bill that may affect certain segments of the Minnesota business community, and particularly some professions. To the discussion, if I might, that Representative Winkler brought forward about minority shareholder rights and things on these matters. Corporations also may make charitable donations or taking corporate profits and paying those to different kinds of charities or different kinds of things that the corporation feels that they have an interest in. I'm curious to know whether Representative Winkler would agree that we should be looking at getting minority shareholders rights on where those funds should be given as well, because there may be individuals who are not backing the causes or the particular charities that the corporation would be looking at.
In a strange way, you're asking Representative Winkler to yield. Representative Winkler?
I'm sitting right next to you, Representative O'Driscoll, Mr. Chair. You could have just asked.
Mr. Chair, I understand, but that doesn't go on the record when you have that sidebar conversation.
I'd be more than happy to cut that deal, Representative O'Driscoll. I think the pernicious influence of big corporate money in campaigns, which we've seen going back to the robber baron Gilded Age and trying to be recreated today, is so pernicious and so burdensome and degrading of our democratic system that I think it would be a better deal to require shareholder approval of all the nice charitable contributions that they release their press releases for. It would be better to have that subject to shareholder approval along with corporate contributions than it would be to just have no shareholder approval for any of it. So I would cut that deal with you today.
Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Winkler, it's not my bill that we're talking about. That actually, technically, the bill isn't even before us at this point. We're just hypotheticals at this point on what possibly could be legislation before the committee. But continuing on that hypothesis, would you advocate then for minority shareholder rights like you were advocating for minority shareholder rights for political campaign contributions? So you said you would agree to something, but I wanted to know if you would specifically agree to rights then for minority shareholders.
Representative Winkler.
Mr. Chair, I think Representative O'Driscoll, I said I would accept individual shareholder or minority shareholder rights on the question of corporate donations to nonprofit charitable purposes. I don't necessarily have as great a concern because I think the harm created by those donations is much less significant than the harm of the corrupting influence of their corporate treasury money in politics.
Representative O'Driscoll.
Well, Mr. Chair, I'd like to thank Representative Winkler for his comments. And I guess this next part of it is to you, when it's appropriate to share my other concerns and comments that I have on the possible legislation that may be coming for the committee, I would be ready to do that.
Thank you, Representative O'Driscoll. I'm happy to talk with you offline about that. Representative Dowd.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A couple of questions for you, I think. And my concerns, I appreciate your willingness to lay this over and work on it. I think it's, and I don't want to question your motives here, but there are some severe problems with this bill. The first of which, if you look at lines 1.21, where it states, unless the shareholders of the corporation have approved the contribution or expenditure by activity of a majority vote. And then if you look at lines 2.5, where they actually define what shareholders means, I get the impression here that, and on 2.5, it's all shareholders of the corporation residing in the state, or in the case the corporation is incorporated in the state, all shareholders of the corporation. My guess is, and I'm not a corporate shareholder or a robber baron or whatever we want to call, however we want to villainize these people, but my guess is that not even a majority of the shareholders show up at a meeting to vote. So with this language, I don't think you could ever pass an expenditure at any shareholders meeting. And I don't know if the chamber would like to comment on that, but it literally, based on that definition, says that you know, a majority of all shareholders of the corporation is what it would take to approve the expenditure. I don't know if that's even possible at a shareholders meeting. So you know, that's something potentially that could be worked on. I also, as far as the public reporting, a corporation is subdivision 3. Corporation is required to provide the notification of shareholders under this section and must provide a copy of that notification to the Campaign Finance and Public Disclosure Board. You know, my assumption is that's really double reporting, and it really seems here like this is a ripe opportunity for some liability on the part of the state. It looks like this is designed to have a chilling effect. You know, obviously a citizen, and I think what we're trying to do here is to make a citizen equal to a corporation. A citizen doesn't have to report when they give a contribution, but yet here we make a corporation jump through all these extra steps when whoever they're giving the donation to already has to report that. So it seems to me that this is literally designed to be troublesome or difficult for a corporation to accomplish. I don't want to question your motives, Mr. Chairman, but I think you're understanding that it does need a lot of work. I also will just comment that at least here in Minnesota, I know there's been a lot of stories nationally about the amount of money that goes into politics, and that may be a problem. You know, there obviously was some stories out recently, and you know, we can debate on what was included or wasn't included on the lists, but that the money coming from labor unions into campaigns is far greater. And I think in Minnesota we can even see that more so the case. And if we really are trying to go after making sure that people have the opportunity to give consent, or at least have a voice in whether or not one of those organizations gives a political contribution. You know, it seems to me that labor unions, and I literally hear this from union members in my own district that aren't happy with where the dollars in their labor union goes, but yet they have no say in that. And it seems to me that that's even a more direct problem because those people, as members of those labor unions, have the money deducted right out of their paychecks. And then literally don't have a say in where that money goes. So if you want to deal with the problem, I think we need to actually identify what the problem is and then work on solving the problem. And in Minnesota, the problem is larger, that labor union money ends up in campaigns and for these sorts of purposes than it is for corporations. We have pretty restrictive laws here on the amount of corporate money that can end up being spent on campaigns. And I think just reading through the campaign finance reports, anybody can see that labor unions are spending more money here in Minnesota and you know, potentially have more influence. But yet their members are not allowed to have any sort of say. So it seems to me that this bill really doesn't get at the real problem. And if that is the problem we're trying to get at, it really looks to me like it might be, and I hope that's not the intent of the author, and I don't mean to imply that that you do have another intent, but I think your willingness to work through the issues is good, and this bill has a lot of issues, so I'll leave it at that.
Thank you, Representative Dowd. Any further testimony or comments from members? Anyone else in the audience who wishes to be heard on this bill? Okay. Well, as I mentioned, I'm laying over the bill, House File 2662. We're not going to take any action on it. If I think we will, I'll certainly let members know in advance. If there's no other business before the committee, meeting is adjourned.